Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. Today, we'll review one of our first podcasts, which was on the topic of trust in your organization. First, we'll listen to a portion of one of Andy's talks called Multiple Choice Teams. And then Andy will spend some time with us unpacking this idea a little further.
I've got to make two promises to you. I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to be trustworthy. I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to be trustworthy. Roman numeral 2. Being trustworthy is not the equivalent of being flawless. Being trustworthy is not the equivalent of being flawless in character or performance. It's not about being perfect. Now, this is, I'll let you fill this in yourself. Being trustworthy means to be worthy of trust. Isn't that neat? That's what the word means. Being trustworthy, it doesn't mean you're flawless. It doesn't mean you're perfect. It doesn't mean you're not going to mess up. It doesn't mean you're not going to be late. It doesn't mean you're going to, it doesn't mean any of that. Being trustworthy simply means I will be worthy of your trust. If you choose to trust me, I'm going to be worthy of your trust. In my notes, I wrote this. A trustworthy person addresses the gaps they've created. That's what a trustworthy person does. When I create a gap because I don't give you what you expect, I don't come through the way I promise. When I create a gap, a trustworthy person comes and addresses the gaps they've created. Three commitments as it relates to being a trustworthy person. Number one, I commit to do what I say I'll do. And when I don't, I'll tell you. I'm committing to do what I've promised I'll do. And when I don't, you won't hear it from anybody else before you hear it from me. Let me tell you, we had a great illustration of this, and I meant to ask John if I can use it, but I didn't, so I'll just use it anyway. John and I are friends. John is one of our staff members, works with Kid Stuff, and my daughter is one of the dancers in Kid Stuff. She's 11 years old. Her name is Allie. And so one night, we pick up Allie from Kid Stuff practice, and she was here, and you know, we pick her up. It's a school night. We get her home, and I don't know how long we've been home, less than an hour, I think, and Sandra gets an email from John. And here's how the email went. I should have brought it to read it. It was to all the parents of all the Kid Stuff actors and dancers that were there that night. And the email went something like this. Dear parents, I want to apologize for what happened tonight at Kid Stuff practice. We know it's a school night. We know you take your time to get your kids here. We were not as organized as we should have been. I'm sure some of the kids felt like it was a waste of time. We really just did a poor time. We did a poor job with time management. I went on and on and on, apologizing for how poorly the kids' stuff practice went and how he felt like we'd probably wasted some kids' time. They didn't even need to be here. We didn't use their time wisely. On and on he went. Apologized to all the parents. We got it the night after the kids' stuff rehearsal. Now, John had a couple of options. Option number one, just wait and see if I hear from anybody, right? Because if I don't hear from anybody, maybe the kids didn't know that they sat in the corner and played video games the whole time and nobody, you know, maybe, but then if maybe I get a complaint, then I'll say, oh, you're right, I'm sorry. That was one option. His second option, had he been really sneaky, is I'm going to send this email out to all the parents except for Allie's parents. Right? I mean, why tell the pastor? He's not a direct report. Why tell the pastor that we wasted his daughter's time? I mean, this is like a really poor reflection on Kid Stuff. It's a poor reflection on the church. Oh my gosh. Well, just don't send it to the Stanleys. Just send it to everybody else. And then if they find out, because you know what? When Allie came home, she never brought it up. Now, you know what? When I got this, I was overwhelmed. Now, as a senior pastor, senior leader, you got to run this through the grid of how you would have responded. I was so thrilled. I was so thrilled. In fact, the next Monday in staff meeting, I had him stand up. I said, hey, I got a story, and he didn't know what's going on. And I said, you know, the kid stuff, and they had this horrible deal, and it didn't go well, and I kind of made it worse sound worse than it really was. And he's like, what is this, like, moment of public humiliation, you know? I said, let me tell you what John did. John owned it before anybody had a chance to complain. And not only did he own it before, in other words, there was a gap. Here's what we expect. Here's what we experience. Gap. He owned it before anybody had a chance to complain. And he even allowed the senior pastor to get the email. And he could have easily taken my wife off that list. And I said to John, in front of the whole staff, John, that is extraordinary leadership. Because trustworthiness is not about being flawless. Trustworthiness is I'll do what I say I'm going to do, and when I don't, I'm going to be the one that tells you. You're going to hear it from me first. In fact, I told him, I said, you know what? As a result of that, I'm a parent too, okay, not just a pastor. I have more confidence in trusting my daughter to your care because now I know if something goes wrong, I won't have to find out about it. I don't have to come searching around. I don't have to ask a bunch of questions. I just know from this point forward, you'll let me know before I have to find out from anybody else. You have increased your trust with me, not decreased it. He breathed a sigh of relief and everybody clapped and he sat down. Okay, so it's fun to be in staff meeting. The point is this, when it comes to trustworthiness, I commit to do what I say I'll do, and when I don't, you're going to hear it first from me. Have you made that kind of commitment to the other staff members on your team? Second commitment. I commit not to overpromise and underdeliver, but if it looks like that's where things are headed, I'll tell you. Now, speaking as a senior pastor and the staff that works directly for me, they know this, and I bet you're the same way. I hate surprises. I hate them. Now, I don't mean birthday. I don't even really like that either, but that's the personality issue, I'm sure. But I don't, in other words, if something's going to be terrible, please let me know before I get there. And then it's terrible, and I'm like, this is terrible. Well, we knew it was going to be terrible. Well, why didn't we just not do it? Well, you know, we didn't hurt anybody's feelings. I'm like, well, you're hurting my feelings, and you're hurting everybody's feelings here. Now I'm going to have to go hurt feelings. Anyway, just kidding. So, in other words, listen, if you've messed up, don't surprise me. Just let me know before I'm going to find out anyway, right? And there's that thing, again, it's a little bit of a personality thing, but this is part of being trustworthy. Trustworthy is I'm going to deliver on my promises, and if I realize I'm not going to be able to deliver on my promises, I'm not going to sit around and hope you don't find out. I'm going to let you know beforehand. And when that happens, you don't lose trust, you gain trust, because trustworthiness isn't about being flawless. It's simply about doing what you say you'll do and letting us know if you're not going to be able to. The third commitment is if you confront me about the gaps I've created, I'll tell you the truth. If you confront me about the gaps I've created, I'm going to tell you the truth. Now, we resist this because we're afraid. And senior leaders, let me say something to you as well. Senior pastors, or maybe your education director, or your sort of staff over staff. Oftentimes, the reason people don't come to us first and they just hope we don't find out is because they fear our response. And generally, the reason they fear our response is because they have seen our response and they have something to fear. And senior leaders, we think that's leadership. We think getting all bowed up, all powered up, and for once I know I'm exactly right and you're exactly wrong, and that never happens at home, but it certainly happened here, you know. I know I'm finally right, and now you're going to get all powered up, and son, let me sit down and tell you, when I was your age and you did all this stupid things, where you're right, and somebody walks out and they're all beat up. You know what? Next time they screw up, how motivated are they going to be to tell you? Zero. You've said, and next time you mess up, you better do a better job hiding it. That's the message. Look, when somebody messes up and you can't change the past, why would you punish that? Why would you not want to create an environment where everybody knows, you know what? It was an honest mistake. And as soon as I tell them, hey, no big deal. The other day, you may have seen this on the internet. It was up briefly. We had a fire alarm. First service a couple weeks ago, and I'm up here, and this, you're not going to believe this. I got eyewitnesses, hundreds, to tell you the truth. I'm giving an illustration about fire. I promise. And I said, it's about the forest fire, and it starts with a match, and a little match burns the whole forest down, and because you apologize, it doesn't make the forest come back, and how could something a little bitty as a flame burn out, you know, making this big fire, and the fire alarm goes off. So half the people think, oh, cool illustration. It's like, the lights are flashing. I'm like, I can't believe this. I mean, right in the middle of service. So we have to dismiss. I mean, exit. Okay, fortunately, we've taken the offering. But anyway, we had to exit. Everybody had to leave. Right? See, those of you that are so spiritual, we don't take an offering. We just have a basket in the back. You'd have missed your whole week's offering. Not us. We got the money, okay? Send everybody out, all right? Business administrator was happy. I only preached half a sermon. Everybody's excited they got to get out of church early. It was a win. So anyway, so we now, imagine this. We have to evacuate this entire building. Now, we have a fire drill, like, plan, like you do, hopefully. You know, if you don't tell anybody. But we'd never, you know, practice it. Come next Sunday, we're going to have a fire drill. You know, you got, I don't know how many, 3,000 children and, 700 middle schoolers, and they're all going this way and they're going this way, and we got to make all the adults go that way. And of course, my baby. It's like, no, ma'am, you got to go out of the building. My baby. You know, we didn't, fortunately, didn't have a lot of that. And they're out there. It was really kind of funny because if you're out there in the back, you can look through the glass and you see your baby going out that way, but we're making you go that way. So there's all that parental separation thing, So we didn't know how it's going to work. So we have to evacuate the whole building. So of course, I'm thinking, what happened? So then somebody sheepishly comes and tells me middle school had a hazer and it set off the fire, the smoke thing, I'm like, So how happy are you as the middle school director that you're in charge of that? You had a band and smoke and, set off the whole thing. So it's kind of like, who's going to tell Andy, And I thought, why would I be mad about that? We had the offering. No, that had nothing to do with it. What? Why would I? And kiddingly, one of our guys, Jason's like, can I come to work tomorrow? And the message got to me. And we kind of laughed about it. But I thought, why? Yeah, it was a big interruption. I mean, it's complicated. When you have video church and you miss a service, it's complicated. But you know what? That was no one's fault. And I found out why it happened. It was no one's fault. Now, here's the deal. Listen. In corporate world, of church world, there's three levels of blame. You're going to blame a person, you're going to blame human nature, or you're going to blame a system. You're going to blame a person, you're going to blame human nature, you're going to blame a system. Blame a person. He should have known better. You come in my office tomorrow morning, and son, do you realize it cost us? And it cost us. It actually didn't cost us, but it could have cost us. And we did this, and a video, and a brand, and internet. I mean, who gains anything from that? And I would have been right. You blame a person, you blame human nature. Well, anybody in middle school, they're all a bunch of immature people running around middle school, If you work, blame human nature, or you blame a system. We had a system problem. It's nobody's fault. But the question is, when there's like a big interruption, here's the question to ask. What is the first line of response from the people who are responsible? Is it, oh my gosh, they're going to kill me? I mean, nobody looks forward to going and explaining, we set off the fire. I mean, it's not like a joy, but in other words, what kind of culture have you created? Because the healthier your culture, the quicker the information gets to you and the more accurate the information gets to you. Now, senior leaders, let me ask you, do you want your information fast or slow? I want it fast. Then you've got to create a culture of trust. Do you want the information to be absolutely true, or do you want it to sort of get hedged along the way so you won't get too mad? Well, I want to know all the truth. Then you have got to create a culture of trust, because trust impacts what gets communicated, when it gets communicated, and how it gets communicated. And those of us in senior leadership, we set the tone for that. Now, if you have a temper, ain't nothing you can do about that. God gave you the temper, I guess. I don't know where it came from, but you know what? So what if you have a temper? You just learn to go lose your temper somewhere else. It's okay. Get in your car and scream, or write an email and delete it, or send it to somebody else to delete, But listen, don't bring all of that negative energy to bear on people you have hired to work with you in your organization. There is no win in that. There's a temporary win because you feel good, by golly, you were right. There's no win because that tone trickles all the way down through the organization. And where there's no trust, it's hard to leverage the gifts and the talents and the abilities of the other people on the team.
Andy, a lot of great stuff in there. A lot of things to learn and hang on to. Question for you, though. How do you foster a culture of trust in an organization?
It's kind of strange, Evan, because trust kind of creates its own momentum in an organization. If you come into a group of people who act trustworthy, it tends to draw you in that direction. And so essentially, for the leader, the best thing we can do to create a culture of trust is to trust. And that's easier for some leaders than others. But if you continue to trust, you just trust till you just can't trust anymore. That, in a sense, that creates momentum, especially with healthy people. There's always the exception, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But the problem is, in organizational life, managers especially, and I don't make a hard line between leaders and managers, but the managerial side of every leader or the manager in an organization tends to want to put things and, approach leadership in a cookie-cutter kind of way. So what happens oftentimes in an organization, an individual will act untrustworthy, create a problem in an organization, and the manager side of the leader or the managers in the organization want to sit down and say, how can we keep this from ever happening again?
Well, the answer is you can't keep it from ever happening again. But the tendency then is to create a brand new structure that would sort of inhibit that behavior. But what that communicates to everybody else in the organization is we don't trust you. Because of the behavior of one, we're going to basically play to the lowest common denominator, the lowest common moral or the lowest common ethical denominator in the whole organization and create rules and regulations as if everybody was like the offender. But what that does is it communicates we don't trust. And when you communicate we don't trust, people tend to live up to that low expectation. The other thing we can do organizationally to foster trust is to let people know up front that they're not going to be penalized for messing up. The reason people cover up is because they're afraid. They're afraid of what's going to happen. They remembered what happened at their last job. Perhaps they know what happens at home. You know, they come into organizational life with this fear of, oh my gosh, if I mess up, here's what's going to happen. So a person messes up, and once they begin to cover for themselves, then they're eventually found out, and you don't trust that person, and, you know, the whole organization, you know, goes ballistic. But if we as leaders can communicate, you know what, everybody's going to make mistakes. And the best thing you can do with a mistake is own up to it. And the second best thing you can do is make sure I hear it from you before I hear it from anybody else. So if a leader leads that way, if a leader honors the person that kind of screws up, you don't want to repeat that behavior, but at least you honor the fact that they came forward and owned it. A bit like the illustration I gave from Kid Stuff, you know, John messes up in his mind. The first thing he does, he owns it. He sends out an email. He lets it, you know, lets it come to my house. So, you know, I made a big deal out of that staff, hopefully to communicate everybody's going to mess up, but if you'll own your mistake and if you'll make sure the person that's most affected hears about it first, then you have nothing to fear. So I think those two things, you resist pulling the trigger that says we're going to complicate our organizational culture by lots of rules and regulations and play to the lowest common denominator, and then you communicate on a regular basis. If you mess up, a mistake isn't mortal. Covering for a mistake may be, but simply making a mistake is not. I think if you do those two things, it at least begins to foster a culture of trust.
But Andy, admitting that you've messed up in most organizations can be risky.
Yeah, it's risky, but it's risky dependent on the culture. What I wrote in my notes is this, that the risks are determined by the maturity and the security of the senior leader, really. The maturity and the security of a senior leader or a leader of a team or department or the whole organization, maturity and security determines how risky it is, because a mature leader can take a mess up, somebody's made a big mistake, and they can keep it in the right context. A secure leader doesn't tend to take things personally, but an insecure leader who's going to take everything personally, an immature leader that thinks every mistake is the end of the world, they're going to overreact. So it really kind of determines on what makes the difference, ultimately, is the maturity and security of the leader. Back to the ultimate leadership question, then, I have to ask myself, we all have to ask ourselves, you know, how mature are we and how secure are we? Because our response to the people who mess up, who act in an untrustworthy way, and we're talking primarily here accidental, you know, not necessarily intentional, our response is really going to be determined not so much by the nature of what they've done, but my personal maturity and security. And every leader listening to this podcast at some point has overreacted, gone home and looked in the mirror and thought, wow, what I've done is worse than what they did, because I just sent a message to them that's going to get back to their family, that's going to trickle down through the whole organization, and next time somebody does something like that, I will be the last person to find out because of my reaction.
Andy, while choosing to trust and choosing to be trustworthy create a healthy organizational culture, should there be any consequences for under-delivering on promises?
You know, the question of, you know, what do you do when somebody comes to you and they haven't done what they said they were going to do? Personally, I don't think there should be consequences the first time. I'm sure there may be exceptions to that, but generally speaking, if a person's come forward and said, here's what I said I was going to do, here's what actually happened, and they've come to me and the first time I've heard about it was through them or pretty quickly, then there's no need for consequences, because I'm saying, you know what? I believe you would have done what you said you were going to do if you could have done it. And if you're telling me you haven't done it, then I trust that there was a good reason you didn't do it. So essentially, I'm going to take the trust ball and I'm going to say, you know, even though you haven't been trustworthy from your perspective, I want you to know I still trust you, and I want to put the weight of trust back in their court. If I react by punishing them or taking them off the assignment or saying, well, I need somebody else to come and manage you through the process, essentially I've said, you've acted untrustworthy. I now think you are an untrustworthy person. I'm going to take your behavior and I'm going to give you a brand or a label. But when I say, you know what, I believe you. It didn't work out. I accept your excuse or accept your explanation. Now, let's go back and try it again. Essentially, I've said, I still trust you, which goes back to the first question. Creating a culture of trust means you have to trust. And I think perhaps some of the best things we can do for employees, especially people who are new to the team, is when they come to us, you know, fear and trembling, and, oh, no, what's he going to say? And, you know, what are they going to do? We say, you know what? I believe you. Now, I also believe that with this second chance, you can get it done. And I think the weight of the responsibility put back in their court, if it's a, you know, average, above average, emotionally healthy person, they're going to be more motivated to get it done the second time around, because the last thing they want to do is come back in with another excuse, because I didn't overreact, I didn't shame them, and I didn't take away a responsibility or communicate, I don't trust you, even though this was an incident of you acting untrustworthy. Evan, there's a subtle difference between micromanaging an individual and reviewing a product, and I say that because in our world, oftentimes, things are created on video, or things are being prepared for a worship service, and there's going to be a public presentation. And I've had in the past, when I've asked to review something before we went public with it, I've had people kind of wince at that and sort of say to me in their own way, what's wrong? Don't you trust me? And I think this is a very important distinction. I can allow a person to operate in total freedom to create something without micromanaging them. But before something goes public, whether it's a website, a song, a creative part of a message, whatever it might be, to say, hey, I'd like to sit down and I want to see this or go through this with you before we go public with it, is a valid thing for a leader to do. And that is not a sign of a lack of trust. Now, if an individual winces at that, like, wait a minute, why do you have to see it first? And, you know, if they throw out, you know, if they play the don't you trust me card, there's an individual that doesn't understand organizational life, and they don't understand your responsibility as a leader. So I think we try not to micromanage the process, but we do review the product before our name or label or brand goes on a product. That's just common sense. So I want to throw that in, because anytime I sense somebody's kind of like, they feel like I don't trust them because I want to see something before it goes public, that is not a trust issue. That's just an organizational safeguard. Now, when it comes to this issue of trust, here's how a leader knows they have a problem. When somebody comes to me and I can tell from what they're saying that they really believe they've delivered, I mean, they're really, really excited, and I look at what they're delivering on and I'm thinking, I'm not really, really excited. This isn't what I expected. This isn't up to our standard. This isn't whatever. And in that conversation, I can tell, you know what, they don't see the world the way I see it. That's a problem. But you know what, that's not a trustworthy problem. Now, oftentimes it's pitched that way. Well, hey, you didn't come through for me, throw it back at you, get back out there, and next time. And there's obviously times you give people a second and third chance. But I think sometimes this issue is confused with a trust issue. Sometimes people just don't see the world the way we do. And they believe they've done their very, very best. And when there's that kind of disconnect, that's a different kind of issue. That's not a trust issue. And it can't be solved with more trust. If standards are different, if we see the world different, simply handing something back to them and saying, this isn't exactly what I was thinking, go back and try it again, chances are it's not going to work the second or third time issue. But that's not really a trust issue.
Sure, sure. Well, Andy, just to wrap it up, what's sort of the key takeaway for an organization or department leader regarding trust and trustworthiness?
I think organizational trust begins and is fueled by the leader looking in the mirror. And if I wake up one day and feel or perceive that I am surrounded by untrustworthy people, I only have myself to blame. There's no way anyone got in this organization without us letting them in. You know, people don't sneak into your organization. They're hired. There's generally a process. And for the leader listening to this who says, well, you know, everybody around me, they're all incompetent, and they're this and they're that, and they tend to blame people, they only have themselves to blame. No one snuck into your organization. So I think that's the first thing. And the second thing is, if you have an organization that keeps untrustworthy people, once again, you only have yourself to blame. So I think trust begins with the person at the top of the organization, the department, the franchise, whatever it might be, and I think our attitude and our response fuels trustworthiness. And then the last thing I would say is this. I think it's important for those of us in leadership at times to kind of turn the whole thing around and ask this question. Not so much, how do people who report to me respond when they're not trustworthy? But this question, what did I do last time I let someone down? How did I respond last time I said, hey, I'll take care of that for you, but I didn't take care of that? What has our response been? Because our response in leadership to our inability or unwillingness to do what we've said we're going to do sets the tone for the rest of the organization. And the thing is, when you're at the top of the organization, no one is going to push back when you make excuses. They're just not. When I say, oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't able to be there, but, you know, I had to preach Sunday, and I had to lead this, and there were people sick, and, you know, everybody's going to go, that's okay, that's okay. But essentially, I've just set the bar, and what I've said is, you know what, if you can't do something and you can't fulfill a promise, just make excuses, because that's what I do. So I think one of the best things we can do in leadership is when we don't fulfill the expectations, not of people we report to, but don't fulfill the expectations of people that report to us, the best thing we can do is to totally own that, take full responsibility for it, and model for them what we want them to do when they're not able to fulfill a responsibility to us. It just goes back to the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And as leaders, we need to lead as we want the people in our organization to lead the people they're responsible for.
That's great, Andy. Thanks for sitting down with us.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast. For more information, please visit us at northpoint.org. Also, to purchase the entire Trust versus Suspicion DVD, including study sessions for your team, visit northpointresources.org.